Osho, the invitation, responses to disciples' questions, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 30.
Beloved Bhagwan, will you give me a few more laws to come out of my confusion?
When all else fails, read the instruction. Women are meant to be loved, not to be understood. Moscow is the city where if Marilyn Monroe should walk down the street with nothing on but shoes, people would stare at her feet first. When people agree with you, you must be wrong. Women's minds are cleaner than men. They change them more often. After 35, a man begins to have thoughts about women. Before that age, he has feelings. I have told Devaki that you must cut your sex life to half. He inquired me, which half? Thinking about it or talking about it? The human race never solves any of its problems. It only outlives them. Assumption is the mother of all screw-ups. What you resist, you become. No matter how many excellent decisions you make in a working day, people will only remember the single bad one. No man is lonely while eating spaghetti. It requires so much attention. You can always find what you are not looking for. In any organization, there will always be one person who knows what is going on. This person must be fired. Don't ever prophesy, for if you prophesy wrong, nobody will forget it. And if you prophesy right, nobody will remember it. One can survive everything nowadays except death. Evil? What is evil? There is only one evil: to deny life. If you can keep calm while all those around you are freaking out, then you don't understand the problem. Inscription on the tomb is stone of Peter the Pessimist. I knew this would happen one day. A KGB agent comes across a Jew reading a Hebrew grammar book on a bench in Gorky Park. "Hey Jew," he says, "why are you bothering to read that? You know we will never let you go to Israel." "Well," says the Jew, "I am reading it in case they speak Hebrew in heaven." "And what if you go to hell?" "Ah," says the Jew, "Russian I already know." "If you really want to get out of confusion," they will be, "read Russian." That's where you are going to bound to reach. A woman was filling out an application form at the bank when she came to the space for age. She hesitated a long time. Finally, the clerk leaned over and said, "The longer you wait, the worse it gets."
My beloved Master, Bhagwan, you are the only hope. Please give me a push.
Ablis Bharati.
almost everybody needs a post. Because almost everybody is just on the border. The enlightenment is not far away. You are not to go miles in search of it. All that you need is to open your eyes and just see clearly where you are, because that very place and that very moment you are already enlightened. Enlightenment is not something that you can make a goal of. It is your reality. It is really foolish to search it. Because the one who is searching it is himself the enlightenment. It is not an achievement, it is a discovery. Or to be more right, it is a rediscovery. You had known it at a time when society has not corrupted your mind. When you were still so small that you were incorruptible, so innocent that the society was not capable to teach you anything, to condition your mind. It is the layer upon layer of conditioning that are hiding your light. You don't have to go anywhere. You have just to put aside all the conditioning. But it is very difficult. It is difficult because you think those conditionings are tremendously important. Just today I saw one newspaper had published one of my talks in which I have said that Adolf Hitler Krishna Manu are not much different from each other. Obviously, the editor was bombarded from all over the country with letters of condemning it, that you should not publish such a thing. Krishna Manu cannot be compared to Adolf Hitler. Before I go deeper into it, I would like to tell you something about Adolf Hitler. I received a letter from the president of the neo-fascist party asking me that I should stop speaking against Adolf Hitler because it hurts our religious feeling. Even I was shocked. It rarely happens that I am shocked. I said, my God, religious feelings are hurt. And the president says on in the letter that perhaps you are not aware that Adolf Hitler was a reincarnation of an old Bible, Old Testament prophet, Elijah. Now somebody is hurt because I have said something against Adolf Hitler, and what I have said, that he has killed 8 million people single-handed just because of a prejudice against Jews. A childish prejudice, because Jews have been believing and they have suffered for that stupid belief for almost 4,000 years that they are the chosen people of God. Moses gave them this idea that you are the chosen people of God. Naturally, they have been hated by everybody else. Nobody can accept that you are the chosen people of God. And particularly Adolf Hitler was very much angry. His people, the Nordic Aryans and Germans, they are the chosen people of God. How dare that Jews talk about that they are the chosen people of God? Of course, these two chosen people of God cannot live together. One has to be demolished, and he alone killed almost 6 million Jews and 2 million other people wherever he invaded. And this is the reincarnation of a Jewish prophet, Elijah. And he is killing Jews in millions. And the president of the neo-fascist party is threatening me that I will have to suffer dangerous consequences if I speak again against Adolf Hitler. And then I said that I don't see much difference between Krishna, Manu and Adolf Hitler. Hindus must have felt the same feeling. Their hearts is hurt, their religious feelings are hurt. But Krishna is responsible for the great war in which India suffered so much. Millions of people died in the war. And he was the man who provoked Arjuna to fight. It was a friendly war, just cousin brothers, Arjuna and Duryodhana. They were fighting for the kingdom. And when Arjuna saw in the battlefield millions of people and they were all related to each other, because it was a family quarrel, so some relatives are on this side, some relatives on that side, some friends on this side, some friends on that side. Even the grandfather of Arjuna, who loved Arjuna immensely, was on the opposite side. Because he loved Arjuna and he hated Duryodhana. But he loved the father of Duryodhana, Dhritarashtra, who was a blind man. Feeling compassion for the blind man, he wanted that his son should become the king. But he loved Arjuna. Now it was a very strange, tangled situation. Dronacharya, the teacher of both Arjuna and Dronacharya, who taught them the art of archery, he was the greatest archer of those days. And he loved Arjuna because he has surpassed even his master in archery. And Duryodhana was far better. But still he had chosen to fight on the side of Duryodhana. Because there was more possibility of Duryodhana being the victor. He was a cunning man. And he had 100 brothers. That old man had many wives. And being old, there was nothing else to do. And those 100 brothers had thousands of relatives and friends. They were really powerful. And they were all cunning. They could do anything, but they were bent upon to have the kingdom. Arjuna had only 5 brothers. And those 5 brothers were deceived by Duryodhana and his brothers into a game of gambling. And in that gambling they lost everything. Even their wife. They had only one wife. 5 brothers. They instead the wife also finally, and then Duryodhana sent them for 13 years to hide into forests and mountains, and if they are found, they will be killed. So for 13 years they had been wandering, hiding themselves into mountains, forests, and they were being chased. Somehow they survived. And because they survived, the only alternative was now, Duryodhana was already in power. He had the kingdom in his hands and the armies and everything, the treasures. And in 13 years these people have become utterly poor, weak, they have lost contact with friends, families. And when Arjuna saw the situation, he was certain about his archery, and he was certain that he will manage to win. But a great question arose in his mind, that what is the point if I have to kill my own brothers? And if I have to kill my own grandfather who has loved me, and if I have to kill my own master who has created a great archer out of me, what is the point even if I win? Killing millions of my own people, whether they are on this side or on that side, they will be killed. It is simply a massacre without meaning. I don't care about such kingdom. And what is the point to sit on a golden throne when your own people, all whom you had loved, for whom you would have liked to live, surrounded by their corpses, sitting on the golden throne? Arjuna thought, I would like so embarrassed, so ashamed, that I am afraid I may commit suicide. I will not be able to tolerate that situation. If I am defeated, then to millions of people are going to die. If I win, that victory is not worth. He decided not to fight. It was Krishna who persuaded him. The whole Srimad Bhagavad Gita is a persuasion. Arjuna goes on arguing against war and violence, and Krishna goes on insisting that it is your duty. That it is your destiny. That it is God's decision that you should fight. And this so-called ideology that you are talking about of non-violence, of no war, of not killing, is nothing but to hide your cowardice, your escapism. So finally he managed to persuade him for the war. And that war has destroyed this country forever. After that war, and it is called the Great Indian War, Mahabharata, after that great war, India has become poor, has lost nerve, has been invaded by all kinds of small tribes, barbarians, nomads. It has remained a slave country for 2000 years, such a vast country. Now it is going to be the greatest country in the world as far as population is concerned. And it has been dominated by small nations, small tribes. People simply lost nerve. They simply dropped the very idea of fighting. Mahabharata, the Great Indian War, was such a deep wound that India lost its guts. And if I had compared Krishna with Adolf Hitler, I don't think I have done anything wrong. But the prejudices are such that people are not ready to see their conditioning. Krishna was a non-vegetarian. Adolf Hitler was a vegetarian. Krishna had 16,000 wives, and only one out of 16,000 was his real married wife. The remaining were all other people's wives, which he has forcibly snatched from their families, from their small children, from their husbands, from their old parents. 16,000 families he has deserted. And I don't think he may have even recognized those 16,000 women. He has treated women almost like cattle. Any woman that caught his eye was immediately taken away by his soldiers to his palace. Hitler remained a bachelor his whole life, just for 3 hours before he died, he married. And the only thing he did with his wife after marriage was committing suicide, because the enemy was dropping bombs on Berlin. He has lost the war. And the woman was persistent for years that we should get married, but he was saying that, wait, till I am victorious, I don't have time for anything else. Once I am victorious and I have proved that the nomad Nordic Germans are the highest and holiest and God-chosen race. I have no time for anything else. Just when he saw that now there is no question of any victory, he is finished. The whole Germany is gone. His capital is being bombed. He is being searched, and he was hiding in an underground basement. He allowed the woman. He told his secretary that find out any priest and bring him immediately. I want to be married. Let this woman's desire be completed. A priest was brought up in the middle of the night. They were married, and after marriage he took poison, the wife took poison, and he had ordered his people that after they are dead, immediately pour petrol over them and burn their bodies completely. They don't want the enemy even to get any trace of their body. Adolf Hitler had no habits of smoking or drinking. He used to get up early in the morning, and he used to go to bed early in the evening. He was almost a Mahatma, a great soul. But Hindus will be hurt because they think Krishna is the reincarnation of God Himself. They are hurt because of a conditioning. If they have a little intelligence to see, then they can see both persons have perpetuated war, violence, cruelty, destructiveness. Manu has for 5,000 years ruled over India, particularly its morality, its caste system, and the harm that he has done to this country is incalculable. Millions of women have burned themselves alive because of Manu. Because he prescribes that every wife who is sincerely faithful to his husband should jump in the funeral pyre when her husband dies. She has no right to live anymore. Because of him, millions of women down 5,000 years have burned themselves alive. this is so ugly. It is because of Manu that 1/4 of India has remained untouchable. They are called the Sudras. They are not accepted as human beings, sub-human beings. Even their shadow is thought to be untouchable. If a Sudra passes by you and his shadow falls on you, you have to take immediately a bath to purify yourself. These Sudras have been killed for any small reason. If they have entered in a street which is prohibited for them, if they have heard even words of Hindu scriptures, Vedas, they were killed because it is prohibited that they should not be educated and they should not know anything about Vedas. Because Vedas will become dirty if these poor people know anything about Vedas. These Sudras have not been accepted in the society. They cannot live inside the city. They have to live outside the city. And they have remained utterly poor. And they have been doing all the dirty work of the society. And they don't have any dignity, any respect. They are not accepted in any way to be human beings. You don't see them. They move outside the city in their small bamboo huts, which any time, and this has been happening even today, any day, Hindus, high caste Hindus, go to their villages, burn their bamboo cottages, burn living beings, rape their women and kill all of them, and it is because of the Manu. And if I had compared Manu and Krishna and Adolf Hitler in the same category, then anybody who says I am wrong, I am ready to accept the challenge. Rather than writing to that newspaper editor, and that coward editor immediately has written an editorial asking apology that it was his fault that he published my statement. It is not his fault. My statement is my statement. And I stand by it. And anybody who thinks that I am wrong, I am ready for any public discussion on the point. But just conditions. Nobody is ready to look at the actual facts. No Christian will be hurt by this because it is not his condition. No Mohammedan will be hurt by this because it is not his condition. Your only problem in life is the religion in which you were born, the society in which you were born, the family in which you were born. But it is unfortunate there is no other way, at least up to now. This is the only way. And because you are born in a certain religion, in a certain ideology, in a certain morality, you become so conditioned and so attached with all these ideas which are not yours. You become absolutely incapable to see what is right and what is wrong. This is the problem which keeps you unenlightened. Otherwise, there is no other problem. Taglis, not only you need a push, everybody needs a push, and really a hard push. Unless you are solved and awakened from your deep sleep, from your unconscious acceptance and identity with others' ideas, you will never become an individual, you will never come to know your own light, you will never come to know your own innocence and the flowers that blossom in your innocence. You have to get rid of all your knowledge, you have to get rid of all your so-called religions, you have to be as innocent as a small child. You are born just as human beings, not as Mohammedans, not as Hindus, not as Christians. All these are prisons in which you have been put from your very beginning. So you have completely forgotten that they are prisons. They appear to be cozy homes. They are not. It needs tremendous courage to drop out from these prisons. But I think every man, every woman has the courage. Just an invitation is needed and an encouragement is needed and a support from a commune, from friends is needed, that you are not alone, that there are other people also on the same path in the same rebellion. At least remember one thing, that if you really want to be alive, contemporary, fresh, and you want to have a future not full of darkness and death, but full of eternity and blissfulness, then you will have to take a little risk. A risk of dropping all kinds of borrowed knowledge, all that has been given to you by others, so that you can find what is your own. I am reminded of One great mathematician, P.D. Ossinski, he was well famous. When he met Gurdjieff, his master, Gurdjieff was not known outside of a small circle of seekers. He was made famous, world famous, because of Ossinski. But the day Ossinski reached to meet Gurdjieff, he has already written a very important book. Perhaps there are only three books which can be said really important. One is written by Aristotle. The name of the book is Organon. It means the first principle of wisdom. The second book is written by Bacon, who is the father of all modern science. His book's name is Novum Organum, New Principle of Wisdom. Aristotle is thought to be the father of Western logic, mathematics, and related sciences. And Bacon is certainly the most important figure who has created the whole sciences, the whole technology that has made West strong, rich, affluent, healthy. And the third important book is Ossinski's Tertium Organum, third principle of wisdom. And this seems to be the most important out of the three. And Ossinski, not out of any egoism, but out of sheer truthfulness, has written inside the book the first thing, that before the two organums existed, Tertium Organum, my book, had already existed before them, because it is more fundamental than those two, Aristotle and Bacon's books. And it is certainly one of the most well-written books I have come across. And I have seen more books than perhaps any living human being. When Ossinski reached Gurdjieff, Gurdjieff was nobody. And Ossinski was a world-famous mathematician. But Gurdjieff gave Ossinski an empty paper and a pencil and told him, go into the other room. No other introduction. And first write down on one side what you know on the fundamental questions of life, and on the other side write what you do not know, because this will be decisive. Whatever you know, I will never discuss with you. You know it, there is no need. Whatever you do not know, I will teach you. There were at least 20 disciples sitting in that dark room, doing nothing, just silently sitting. Ostensky had not expected such an introduction. The man who has brought him has been resisting for almost 9 months that unless the master says yes, I cannot introduce you. And after 9 months waiting, he was brought in his presence, and this was the behavior that he got. He said, it is strange. But he went into the other room, there was nothing else to do. And for the first time in his life, he started thinking, whether I know it, do I know anything about God? And I had been writing about God. Do I know anything about human soul? And I had been writing about it. Do I know anything about consciousness? And I had been writing about it. He could not write a single word on the side where he was supposed to write what he knows already. And he came back after half an hour and returned the paper empty. And he said, forgive me, I tried hard. But really, I don't know anything. You will have to teach me from ABC. This is the way of dropping your conditioning. This is the way to realize your ignorance. But your ignorance is finally turns out to be your innocence. It looks like a death when everything that you know and that you have been attached is taken away. But it is on the other side a resurrection. So if you want really to wake up, and if you want to become also part of the great hope for the humanity and the future of man, then die to the past. So that you can be reborn to the future. Less than that will not do. More than that is not needed.
Beloved Bhagwan, what does it mean to love myself?
Prem Kabir, one has to begin not by loving oneself, because you don't know who you are, whom you are going to love. If you start by loving yourself, you will love only your ego, which is not yourself, which is your false personality. And almost everybody loves his personality. everybody loves his ego. Even the ugliest woman, if you say to her, "How beautiful you are," will not refuse to accept it. I have heard two old men meet on a street corner. "Where have you been for the past 8 weeks?" "In jail," says the second man. "In jail? How come?" says the first man. The second old man replies, "Well, about 8 weeks ago, I was standing on a street corner and this beautiful young girl rushes up with a policeman and says, 'He is the man, officer. He is the one who attacked me.' And you know, I felt so flattered, I admitted it." How many things you have admitted that you know perfectly well are not true? People say you are so loving, so sincere, so truthful, so beautiful, so honest, and you never deny. This is not the love I have been talking about. Yes, I would like you to love yourself. Because unless you love yourself, you cannot love anybody else. You don't know what love is if you have not loved yourself. But before you can love yourself, you have to know yourself. Hence, love is secondary, meditation is primary. And the miracle is, if you meditate and slowly, slowly get out of the ego and out of your personality and realize your real self, love will come on its own. You don't have to do anything. It is a spontaneous flowering. But it blossoms only in a certain climate. And that climate I call meditation. In the climate of silence, no mind, no disturbance inside, absolute clarity, peace and silence, and suddenly you will see thousands of flowers have opened within you, and their fragrance is love. Literally, first you will love yourself, because that will be your first encounter. First you will become aware of the fragrance that is arising in you, and the light that has born in you. and the blissfulness that is powering on you. Then loving will become your nature. Then you will love many. Then you will love all. In fact, what we know in our ignorance is a relationship, and what we know in our awareness is no more a relationship. It is not that I love you. It is that I am love. And you have to understand the difference. When you say I love you, what about others? What about the whole existence? The more narrower your love is, the more imprisoned. Its wings are cut. It cannot fly in the sky across the sun. It does not have freedom. It is almost in a golden cage. The cage is beautiful, but inside the cage, the bird is not the same bird that you see in the sky opening its wings. Love has to become not a relationship, not a narrowing, but a broadening. Love has to become your very quality, your very character, your very being, your radiance. Just as the sun radiates light, not for anyone in particular, unaddressed, meditation radiates love unaddressed. Of course, first it is felt within oneself, for oneself, and then it starts radiating all around. Then you love not only human beings, you love trees, you love birds. You simply love. You are love. You are asking Prem Kabir, what does it mean to love myself? It means meditation. It means to be yourself, and nature will bring love as a reward. Just don't listen to the priests. They are the enemies of love. They have been teaching the world to hate yourself and to hate the world, because they have been teaching either it is a sin that you are born, or it is because of your evil acts of past life that you are suffering in this life. But no religion accepts this life with joy and rejoicing, as a gift, as a reward, of which you are not worthy, of which you don't claim any right. you have not earned it. So the first thing is, avoid the priests. They have taught you life negative values. And my effort here is to bring back life affirmation. That's what I call loving yourself. Accepting yourself not as a sinner. How can you accept yourself if you think you are a sinner? How can you love yourself if you think you are nothing but full of guilt? Nothing but an accumulated past of evil acts of millions of lives. You will hate yourself. And that's what your priests have been trying. Renounce life, hate pleasure, hate everything, and sacrifice everything if you want to enter into paradise. Nobody has returned ever from paradise. So there is no evidence of any paradise anywhere. No proof. It is just a futile exercise which has never been able to come to a conclusion. The old priest was warning his congregation about sin. Sin, he said, is like a big dog. There is the big dog of pride, and the big dog of envy, and the big dog of greed, and finally there is the big dog of theft. And you have to kill those big dogs before they kill you and prevent you from getting to heaven. It can be done, I know, because over the years I have done it. I killed the big dog of envy, the big dog of pride, the big dog of greed, and yes, my children, I killed the big dog of sex. Father, came a voice from the back of the church, are you sure that last dog did not die a natural death? You cannot change nature. If you can simply live naturally, transformations come. A day comes when sex disappears, but not by your efforts. By your efforts, it goes on hanging around. The more you repress it, the more you have it. The more you live it, the more is the possibility to go beyond it. An old couple were sitting at home one evening, listening to the faith healer on the radio. Okay, Fox, he began, God wants to heal you all. All you have to do is put one hand on the radio and the other hand on the part that is sick. The old lady got up, shuffled over to the radio and put her hand on her arthritic hip. Then the old man put one hand on the radio and the other hand on his fly. His wife looked at him with contempt and said, "You old idiot." The man said he would heal the sick, not raise the dead. Live naturally. Live peacefully. Live inwardly. Just give a little time to yourself, being alone, being silent, just watching the inner scene of your mind. Slowly, slowly, thoughts disappear. Slowly, slowly, one day, the mind is so still, so silent, as if it is not there. Just this silence, in this moment, you are not here. As if the whole Buddha Hall is empty. In this silence within you, you will find a new dimension of life. In this dimension, greed does not exist. Sex does not exist. Anger does not exist. Violence does not exist. It is not a credit to you. It is the new dimension beyond mind, where love exists pure, unpolluted by any biological urge, where compassion exists for no other reason. Not to get any reward in heaven. Because compassion is a reward unto itself. And a deep longing exists to share all that treasure that you have discovered within yourself, and to shout from the housetops to the people that you are not poor, that paradise is within you, that you need not be beggars, that you are born emperors. Just you have to discover your empire, and your empire is not of the outside world. Your empire is of your own interiority. It is within you, and it has always been there, just waiting for you to come home. Love will come, and will come in abundance. So so much that you cannot contain it, you will find it is overflowing you. It is reaching in all directions. Just discover your hidden splendor. Life can be simply a song. A song of joy. Life can be simply a dance. A celebration. A continuous celebration. All that you have to learn is a life affirmative lifestyle. I call that man only religious who is life affirmative. All those who are life negative may think they are religious. They are not. Their sadness shows they are not. Their seriousness shows they are not. A man of authentic religion will have a sense of humor. It is our universe. It is our home. We are not orphans. This earth is our mother. This sky is our father. This whole vast universe is for us. And we are for it. In fact, there is no division between us and the whole. We are organically joined with it. We are part of one orchestra. To feel this music of existence is the only religion that I can accept as authentic, as valid. It does not have any scriptures. It need not have. It does not have any statues of gods, because it does not believe in any hypothesis. It has nothing to worship. It has only to be silent, and out of that silence comes gratitude, prayer, and the whole existence turns into a godliness. There is no God as a person. God is spread all over. In the trees, in the birds, in the animals, in humanity, in the wise, in the otherwise. All that is alive is nothing but godliness, ready to open its wings, ready to fly into the freedom, ultimate freedom of consciousness. Yes, you will love yourself and you will love the whole existence too. Hope you did that.
Yes, Bhagwan.